Chapter 4. At first sight, you would not take this prince for an old man at all, and it is only when you come near and take a good look at him that you see he is merely a dead man working on wires. All the resources of science are brought to bear upon this mummy in order to give it the appearance of life and youth. A marvellous wig, glorious whiskers, moustache, and Napoleon, all of the most raven black, cover half his face. He is painted and powdered with very great skill, so much so that one can hardly detect any wrinkles. What has become of them, goodness only knows. He is dressed in the pink of fashion, just as though he had walked straight out of a tailor's fashion page. His coat, his gloves, tie, his waistcoat, his linen, are all in perfect taste, and in the very last mode. The prince limps slightly, but so slightly that one would suppose he did it on purpose, because that was in fashion too. In his eye he wears a glass, in the eye which is itself glass already. He was soaked with scent. His speech and manner of pronouncing certain syllables was full of affectation, and this was, perhaps, all that he retained of the mannerisms and tricks of his younger days. For if the prince had not quite lost his wits as yet, he had certainly parted with nearly every vestige of his memory, which, alas, is a thing which no amount of perfumeries and wigs and rouge and tight lacing will renovate. He continually forgets words in the midst of conversation, and loses his way, which makes it a matter of some difficulty to carry on a conversation with him. However, Maria Alexandrovna has confidence in her inborn dexterity, and at sight of the prince she flies into a condition of unspeakable rapture.
"Oh, but you've not changed! You've not changed a bit!"
she cries, seizing her guest by both hands and popping him into a comfortable armchair.
"Sit down, dear prince. Do sit down. 6 years, prince. 6 whole long years since we saw each other, and not a letter, not a little tiny scrap of a note all the while. Oh, how naughty you have been, prince, and how angry I have been with you, my dear friend. But tea, tea. Oh, good heavens, Nastasya Petrovna, tea for the prince, quick.
Thanks. I'm very, very sorry,
stammered the old man. I forgot to mention that he stammered a little, but he did even this as though it were the fashion to do it.
"Very sorry. Fancy, I wanted to come last year, but they told me that there was cholera here."
"There was foot-and-mouth disease here, uncle," put in Mozgliakov by way of distinguishing himself. Maria Alexandrovna gave him a severe look.
Yes, foot-and-mouth disease, or something of that sort, said the prince. So I stayed at home. Well, and how is your husband, my dear Anna Nikolaevna, still in his precarious work?
No, prince, said Maria Alexandrovna, a little disconcerted. My husband is not a procurer.
I'll bet anything that uncle has mixed you up with Anna Nikolaevna Antipova, said Mozgliakov,
but stopped suddenly on observing the look on Maria Alexandrovna's face.
Yes, of course, Anna Nikolaevna, Anne. Oh, what the deuce! I'm always forgetting. Antipova, of course, continued the prince.
No, prince, you have made a great mistake, remarked Maria Alexandrovna with a bitter smile. I am not Anna Nikolaevna at all, and I confess I should never have believed that you would not recognize me. Oh, you have astonished me, Prince. I am your old friend, Maria Alexandrovna Moskolov. Don't you remember Maria Alexandrovna? Maria Alexandrovna! Oh, think of that! And I thought she was... what's her name? Yes, Anna Vasilievna. Oh, c'est délicieux! Why, I thought you were going to take me to this Anna Matveyevna. Oh, dear me, c'est charmant. It often happens so with me. I get taken to the wrong house. But I'm very pleased, very pleased. So you're not Nastasya Vasilievna? How interesting. I'm Maria Alexandrovna, Prince. Maria Alexandrovna. Oh, how naughty you are, Prince, to forget your best, best friend.
Yes, best friend, forgive me,
stammered the old man, staring at Zina.
That's my daughter, Zina. You are not acquainted yet, Prince. She wasn't here when you were last in town in the year, you know.
Oh, this is your daughter,
muttered the old man, staring hungrily at Zina through his glasses.
Dear me, dear me. Oh, charmante, charmante. Oh, but what a lovely girl,
he added, evidently impressed.
Tea, Prince,
remarked Maria Alexandrovna, directing his attention to the page standing before him with the tray. The prince took a cup and examined the boy, who had a nice, fresh face of his own.
Ah, this is your little boy. Oh, what a charming little boy. And does he behave nicely?
But, Prince, interrupted Maria Alexandrovna impatiently, what is this dreadful occurrence I hear of? I confess I was nearly beside myself with terror when I heard of it. Were you not hurt at all? Oh, do take care. One cannot make light of this sort of thing.
Upset! Upset! The coachman upset me!
Cried the prince with unwonted vivacity.
I thought it was the end of the world, and I was frightened out of my wits. I didn't expect it. I didn't indeed. And my coachman is to blame for it all. Oh, I trust you, my friend, to look into the matter well. I feel sure he was making an attempt on my life.
All right, Uncle, said Paul. I'll see about it. But, look here, forgive him just this once, Uncle. Just this once, won't you?
Not I. Not for anything. I'm sure he wants my life. He and Lavrenti, too. It's the new ideas. It's communism in the fullest sense of the word. I daren't meet them anywhere.
You are right. You are quite right, Prince, cried Maria Alexandrovna. You don't know how I suffer myself from these wretched people. I've just been obliged to change two of my servants, and you've no idea how stupid they are, Prince.
Yes, quite so,
said the prince, delighted, as all old men are whose senile chatter is listened to with civility.
But I like a flunky to look stupid. It gives them presence. There's my Terenti now. You remember Terenti, my friend? Well, the first time I ever looked at him, I said, "You shall be my hall porter." He's stupid, phenomenally stupid. He looks like a sheep. But his dignity and majesty are wonderful. When I look at him, he seems to be composing some learned dissertation. He's just like the German philosopher Kant, or like some fat old turkey, and that's just what one wants in a serving man.
Maria Alexandrovna laughed and clapped her hands in the highest state of ecstasy. Paul supported her with all his might. Nastasya Petrovna laughed too, and even Zina smiled.
"But, Prince, how clever, how witty, how humorous you are!" cried Maria Alexandrovna. "What a wonderful gift of remarking the smallest refinements of character! And for a man like you to eschew all society and shut yourself up for 5 years with such talents, why, Prince, you could write, you could be an author, you could emulate von Vezin, Gribojedov, Gogol."
Yes, said the delighted Prince. "I can reproduce things I see very well. And do you know, I used to be a very witty fellow indeed some time ago. I even wrote a play once. There were some very smart couplets, I remember, but it was never acted."
"Oh, how nice it would be to read it over, especially just now, eh, Zina? For we are thinking of getting up a play, you must know, Prince, for the benefit of the martyrs of the fatherland, the wounded soldiers. There now, how handy your play would come in."
Certainly. I would even write you another. I think I've quite forgotten the old one. I remember there were two or three such epigrams that..."
Here the prince kissed his own hand to convey an idea of the exquisite wit of his lines.
"I recollect when I was abroad. Oh, I made a real furore. I remember Lord Byron well. We were great friends. You should have seen him dance the mazurka one day during the Vienna Congress."
"Lord Byron, uncle? Surely not."
Yes, Lord Byron. Perhaps it was not Lord Byron, though. Perhaps it was someone else. No. It wasn't Lord Byron. It was some Pole. I remember now. Wonderful fellow that Pole was. He said he was a count, and he turned out to be a cook shopman. But he danced mazurka wonderfully, and broke his leg at last. I recollect I wrote some lines at the time. "Our little Pole danced like blazes." How did it go now? Oh, wait a minute. No, I can't remember.
"I'll tell you, uncle, it must have been like this," said Paul, becoming more and more inspired. "But he tripped in a hole which stopped his crazes."
Yes, that was it, I think, or something very like it. I don't know, though. Perhaps it wasn't. Anyhow, the lines were very, very smart. I forget a good deal of what I have seen and done. I'm so busy now.
"But do let me hear how you have employed your time in your solitude, dear Prince," said Maria Alexandrovna. I must confess that I have thought of you so often, and often, that I am burning with impatience to hear more about you and your doings.
Employed my time? Oh, very busy. Very busy, generally. One rests, you see, part of the day. And then I imagine a good many things.
I should think you have a very strong imagination, haven't you, Uncle? Remarked Paul.
Exceptionally so, my dear fellow. I sometimes imagine things which amaze even myself. When I was at Kadyuev... By the by, you were vice-governor of Kadyuev, weren't you?
I, Uncle? Why, what are you thinking of?
No? Oh, just fancy, my dear fellow. And I've been thinking all this time how funny that the vice-governor of Kadyuev should be here with quite a different face. He had a fine, intelligent, dignified face, you know. Oh, wonderful fellow. Always writing verses, too. He was rather like the King of Diamonds from the side view, but...
No, Prince, interrupted Maria Alexandrovna. I assure you, you'll ruin yourself with the life you are leading. To make a hermit of oneself for 5 years, and see no one, and hear no one. Oh, you're a lost man, dear Prince. Ask any of those who love you. They'll all tell you the same. You're a lost man.
No, cried the Prince. Really?
Yes, I assure you of it. I am speaking to you as a sister, as a friend. I am telling you this because you are very dear to me, and because the memory of the past is sacred to me. No, no, you must change your way of living, otherwise you will fall ill and break up and die.
Gracious heavens! Surely I shan't die so soon, cried the old man. You are right about being ill. I am ill now and then. I'll tell you all the symptoms. I'll detail them to you. Firstly,
Uncle, don't you think you'd better tell us all about it another day? Paul interrupted hurriedly. I think we had better be starting just now, don't you?
Yes. Yes, perhaps. Perhaps. But remind me to tell you another time. It's a most interesting case, I assure you.
But listen, my dear Prince, Maria Alexandrovna resumed. Why don't you try being doctored abroad?
Abroad? Yes, I shall certainly go abroad. I remember when I was abroad, about 20, it was delightfully gay and jolly. I very nearly married a Viscountess, a Frenchwoman. I was fearfully in love, but somebody else married her, not I. It was a very strange thing. I had only gone away for a couple of hours, and this German baron fellow came and carried her off. He went into a madhouse afterwards.
Yes, dear Prince, you must look after your health. There are such good doctors abroad, and besides... The mere change of life, what will not that alone do for you? You must desert your dear Donchanovo, if only for a time.
Certainly. I've long meant to do it. I'm going to try hydropathy.
Hydropathy?
Yes, I've tried it once before. I was abroad, you know, and they persuaded me to try drinking the waters. There wasn't anything the matter with me, but I agreed just out of delicacy for their feelings. And I did seem to feel easier somehow. So I drank and drank and drank up a whole waterfall. And I assure you, if I hadn't fallen ill just then, I should have been quite well, thanks to the water. But I confess, you've frightened me about these maladies and things. I feel quite put out. I'll come back directly.
Why, Prince, where are you off to? Asked Maria Alexandrovna in surprise.
Directly, directly. I'm just going to note down an idea.
What sort of idea? Cried Paul, bursting with laughter. Maria Alexandrovna lost all patience.
I cannot understand what you find to laugh at, she cried as the old man disappeared. To laugh at an honourable old man, and turn every word of his into ridicule, presuming on his angelic good nature. I assure you, I blushed for you, Paul Alexandrovitch. Why, what do you see in him to laugh at? I never saw anything funny about him.
Well, I laugh because he does not recognize people and talks such nonsense.
That's simply the result of his sad life, of his dreadful 5 years' captivity under the guardianship of that she-devil. You should pity, not laugh at him. He did not even know me. You saw it yourself. Oh, I tell you, it's a crying shame. He must be saved at all costs. I recommend him to go abroad so that he may get out of the clutches of that beast of a woman.
Do you know what? We must find him a wife, cried Paul.
Oh, Mr. Mosliakov, you are too bad. You really are too bad.
No, no, Maria Alexandrovna. I assure you this time I'm speaking in all seriousness. Why not marry him off? Isn't it rather a brilliant idea? What harm can marriage do him? On the contrary, he is in that position that such a step alone can save him. In the first place, he will get rid of that fox of a woman, and secondly, he may find some girl, or better still, some widow, kind, good, wise and gentle, and poor, who will look after him as his own daughter would, and who will be sensible of the honour he does her in making her his wife. And what could be better for the old fellow than to have such a person about him, rather than the woman he has now? Of course, she must be nice-looking, for Uncle appreciates good looks. Didn't you observe how he stared at Miss Zina? But how will you find him such a bride? Asked Nastasya Petrovna, who had listened intently to Paul's suggestion.
What a question! Why, you yourself, if you pleased. And why not, pray? In the first place, you are good-looking, you are a widow, you are generous, you are poor, well, at least I don't think you are very rich. Then you are a very reasonable woman. You'll learn to love him and take good care of him. You'll send that other woman to the deuce and take your husband abroad, where you will feed him on pudding and lollipops till the moment of his quitting this wicked world, which will be in about a year, or in a couple of months, perhaps. After that, you emerge a princess, a rich widow, and as a prize for your goodness to the old gentleman, you'll marry a fine young marquis, or a governor-general, or somebody of the sort. There, that's a pretty enough prospect, isn't it?
Goodness me, I should fall in love with him at once out of pure gratitude if he only proposed to me. said the widow, with her black eyes all ablaze. "But, of course, it's all nonsense." "Nonsense, is it? Shall I make it sound sense, then, for you? Ask me prettily, and if I don't make you his betrothed by this evening, you may cut my little finger off. Why, there's nothing in the world easier than to talk Uncle into anything you please. He'll only say, yes, just as you heard him now. We'll marry him so that he doesn't know anything about it, if you like. We'll deceive him and marry him, if you please. Any way you like it, it can be done. Why, it's for his own good. It's out of pity for himself. Don't you think, seriously, Nastasya Petrovna, that you had better put on some smart clothes, in any case?" Paul's enthusiasm amounted by now to something like madness, while the widow's mouth watered at his idea in spite of her better judgment. I know I look horribly untidy," she said. "I go about anyhow nowadays. There's nothing to dress for. Do I really look like a regular cook?" All this time, Maria Alexandrovna sat still, with a strange expression on her face. I shall not be far wrong if I say that she listened to Paul's wild suggestion with a look of terror, almost. She was confused and startled. At last she recollected herself and spoke. "All this is very nice, of course, but at the same time it is utter nonsense and perfectly out of the question," she observed cuttingly. "Why? Why, my good Maria Alexandrovna, why is it such nonsense, or why out of the question?" "For many reasons, and principally because you are, as the prince is also, a guest in my house, and I cannot permit anyone to forget their respect towards my establishment. I shall consider your words as a joke, Paul Alexandrovitch, and nothing more. Ah, here comes the prince, thank goodness."
"Here I am!" cried the old man as he entered. "It's a wonderful thing how many good ideas of all sorts I'm having today. And another day I may spend the whole of it without a single one. Astonishing! Not one all day."
"Probably the result of your accident today, Uncle. Your nerves got shaken up, you see, and..."
"Yes, I think so. I think so, too. And I look on the accident as profitable on the whole. And therefore I'm going to excuse the coachman. I don't think it was an attempt on my life after all, do you? Besides, he was punished a little while ago when his beard was shaved off."
"Beard shaved off? Why, Uncle, his beard is as big as a German state."
"Yes, yes, a German state. You are very happy in your expressions, my boy, but it's a false one. Fancy what happened. I sent for a price current for false hair and beards, and found advertisement for splendid servants' and coachmen's beards, very cheap, extraordinarily so. So I sent for one, and it certainly was a beauty. But when we wanted to clap it on the coachman, we found he had one of his own, twice as big. So I thought, shall I cut off his, or let him wear it and send this one back? And I decided to shave his off, and let him wear the false one."
"On the theory that art is higher than nature, I suppose, Uncle?"
"Yes, yes, just so. And I assure you, when we cut off his beard, he suffered as much as though we were depriving him of all he held most dear." "Oh, but we must be going, my boy.
But I hope, dear prince, that you will only call upon the governor, cried Maria Alexandrovna in great agitation. You are mine now, prince. You belong to my family for the whole of this day. Of course, I will say nothing about the society of this place. Perhaps you are thinking of paying Anna Nikolaevna a visit. I will not say a word to dissuade you, but at the same time I am quite convinced that time will show. Remember one thing, dear prince, that I am your sister, your nurse, your guardian for today at least, and, oh, I tremble for you. You don't know these people, prince, as I do. You don't know them fully, but time will teach you all you do not know.
Trust me, Maria Alexandrovna, said Paul. It shall all be exactly as I have promised you.
Oh, but you're such a weathercock. I can never trust you. I shall wait for you at dinner-time, prince. We dine early. How sorry I am that my husband happens to be in the country on such an occasion. How happy he would have been to see you. He esteems you so highly, prince. He is so sincerely attached to you.
Your husband? Dear me, so you have a husband, too?
Observed the old man.
Oh, prince, prince, how forgetful you are! Why, you have quite forgotten the past. My husband, Afanasy Matveyevich, surely you must remember him. He is in the country, but you have seen him thousands of times before. Don't you remember Afanasy Matveyevich?
Afanasy Matveyevich, dear me, and in the country. Oh, how very charming. So you have a husband. Oh, dear me, I remember a vaudeville very like that. Something about the husband's here and his wife at Tver. Oh, charming, charming. Such a good rhyme, too. And it's the most ridiculous story. Charming. Charming. The wife's away, you know, at Yaroslav or somewhere, and the husband is... Oh, dear me, I'm afraid I've forgotten what we were talking about. Yes, we must be going, my boy. Au revoir, madame. Adieu, ma charmante demoiselle, he added, turning to Zina and putting the ends of her fingers to his lips.
Come back to dinner. To dinner, prince. Don't forget to come back here, quick,
cried Maria Alexandrovna after them as they went out.
Be back to dinner.